Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott Warren. That background noise means we are remote.
We are ringside at Way Too Cool 50K, and that sound you hear is a generator.
It's the generator that keeps the arch up.
We talked to him about shutting down the generator, but the arch would fall, and a finish line arch on the ground is no arch.
You don't want people tripping they come through the finish line.
It's called a mat.
Hey, today we thought it would be fun, because we are remote, just to be a little bit different, and we're going to talk to a few different runners that are going to be coming by the finishers, finisher's tent. And we have some do's and don'ts for trail runners on race day. Is that correct?
Well, Scott, we don't have do's and don'ts. What we've done is scoured the internet and stole from some top athletes.
We plagiarized without permission.
Yes, but we'll give credit.
Oh, of course.
Anton Karpichka, two-time Leadville winner. Pam Smith, 2013 Western States 100-mile champion. Michael Yates, Jeff Rose. There are a number of Hal Kerner. Do's and don'ts on race day, and we've compiled them, or someone did, and then we simply cut and pasted onto a piece of paper, and we're going to choose a few of these, or our guests will choose one of their own, and we'll talk about it.
Because that's what we do in the trails. We just chat about things.
We borrow from one another and pass it along as tribal knowledge.
Yes.
And we may take credit for it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if any of us has had a thought of our own. We've probably repeated something that others have said along the way.
You know, race day is always fun for me because I get to bump into and get reacquainted with people that I really admire. And this morning, we actually bumped into Dana.
Dana Gard, yes.
And we talked to him for a little bit about one of the rules that you learned from Dana early on about hiking a hill, running a hill. And we talked to him about that.
Well, you know, that's something that I've really practiced a lot, hiking. but anywhere in a race that you need to keep going, but you're too fatigued to run, but you don't need to walk the full time, and just getting into a rhythm. And he taught me early on the 25-25 rule. And the way I understood the 25-25 rule is, you know, you count 25 steps on your right foot while you're running, and then you walk, and you count both the left and the right 25 steps. So you get in this rhythm, 25, 25, 25, and that means you're running half the time, and you're making progress.
Your math is pretty fuzzy. You're actually running more if you're counting running on one step and hiking on both steps.
Scott.
So it's actually probably 75% of the time. Or two-thirds of the time, I should say.
So
maybe my math is bad, too.
You know, if you're to the point in your run where you have to run-walk, then your math isn't strong anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and one of the great things about the sport is Dana taught Don this years ago, and as I started getting into running, Don taught me. Now, what I remember of Don teaching me was it wasn't 25-25, it was 40-40. So that was the rule that I had.
You're stronger than I am, Scott. I can only handle 25. But the point is, you can make any number you want. You can do tens if you need it. You can do, depends on the hill, depends on your fatigue, it depends on what you're doing.
And the great thing is you're using different muscles. You're not overexerting yourself and getting to the top of the hill with nothing left in the tank. The idea, or one of the strategies out there, is that you get to the top of the hill and you still have strength and some energy left to run that next flat or downhill.
So Scott, as you looked over some of these pearls of wisdom,
yes.
Is there any that jump out to you that you want to take before any of our guests take? Because we should get first choice, right? I mean, they don't even know yet. We can say, oh, that one's already taken. So is there any that you really want to talk about?
You know, I am, there's one that kind of that goes between Anton Krupicka and Jeff Rose, and that is to don't overthink or don't over-prepare or over-analyze a race ahead of time.
I've never been accused of over-preparing or overthinking.
There is an extreme other side that is don't even think about the race before race day, which I think may be where you sit in your strategy training. But for me, I think initially I was very over analytical. I knew you know, the course very well. I knew where the aid stations were. I knew what I had a spreadsheet of what I was going to eat at each aid station, and I had my watch set so that every 45 minutes I was taking eating a goo. Every half hour I was taking a salt pill.
How'd that work out for you?
It didn't work real well. And I think it's better just to not overanalyze, and like we preach on the podcast, is really listen to your body and pay attention to what's happening. Be in the moment.
Yeah, those are good ones. I think the one that jumped out to me was from Hal Korner, and he said, do not lose sight of your humanity. And I like that. And he writes in here, if a runner rolls an ankle or his anchor, you know, take the time to offer some help. If someone's struggling, or if he or she needs some water or salt, if there's anything that you can do, give him a hand. And I really like that. And I remember at Angeles Crest, Jimmy Dean Freeman demonstrated that to me. There was a runner that was alongside of the trail, and we were racing. We were actually doing pretty well, and he didn't care about his time at all or his race, and he just tended to that person. He set such a good example, and he really showed me that don't lose sight of your humanity. This is just a race, but this is a person that needs some help.
Tribe is more important than the day.
Yes, than your finish time, absolutely. And you'll remember helping that person, and that person will remember you helping them more than you'll remember your time from that race.
And I would assume that Jimmy Dean was paying it forward, that person at some point down the line is going to help another person, and that's what makes a strong tribe.
Yep, yeah, that's true. And joining us also here today is Victor Ballesteros from Victory Sport Design, and he is, as you know, he's the founder of his, what is it exactly? What would I call it? I mean,
it's called
satchels.
They're gear bags. Although they are used for a great many things, I use them for our pups. We pack all their gear into the bags whenever we want to go places. And the reason that they're so unbelievably unique is because they are designed in a way where everything is compartmentalized and you can change the composition of the interior space. So you can really utilize it to your own particular needs. And that's why I think that most people are pretty psyched about them.
That's what you think is cool about it.
Now let's say what we
yeah,
like
because
about
Scott
them.
And because, I both have
because
it.
Because we use them in real world. I mean, Victor uses them in real world. That's how he developed them.
Yeah.
But we have different perspectives.
I just think they look cool. And that what's that big one that I carry? That
the bear. The Kodiak.
The Kodiak is a traveling piece of luggage that you can put on your back just like a backpack. It fits in the overhead compartment in the airline, and you just look like an athlete. Your body may not say athlete. Your time on the trail may not say athlete. But when you step up to the luggage carousel, you are an athlete.
I believe when you use them, your body actually does morph into being looking more fit. Your rear end starts to look a little bit more defined. Uh-huh. And, it's...
Yeah. I need two. Victor, put me down for two. You know, the thing that I love about all the bags is, like Victor was saying, you can customize it, but very organized, and I like the see-through windows so that you can open up that lid and you can see it. You know, it's very well organized, but you can see what's in each of the little pouches.
Well, that's the big Kodiak bag, but he also has drop bags that you can use too, and they're reusable. It's not like you make an investment into one, you're going to be racing a while. Get a good organized drop bag that you can see your contents. It fits nice, and they're easy to spot when you show up. It's not just another shoebox. I mean, it's a Victory Sport design.
Well, and on that note, a lot of times, because we only have two colors, a blue and a red, and a lot of people say, oh, well, you only have two colors. You know, they're going to get lost in a sea of blue and red. But because of those windows that you're talking about, again, you can customize it so that you can put a big, huge, whatever you feel identifies you as you. And believe me, people say, oh, I'm never going to find it. And then they invest in one. And then they come back and they say, oh, my God, I was at an event. And boom, there it was right in front of my face.
So. Now, Victor is not just a designer of bags. He's also an ultra runner and a very fine one at that. In fact, he joined you at Tour de France this last year.
Yes.
No, he only joined me for half of it because he did the whole thing.
He finished?
Yeah.
All right. Way to go. And this was your second time?
This is my second time going out there.
All right.
And I have to say that anyone who wants to go out and do that race, don't do it.
Because you want to get back in.
Don't say that. All morning I've been convincing Don to go back.
No, it is definitely... I argue that it's the toughest foot race in the world.
Wow.
Like, single stage foot race. I don't know what else could compare to it. You know, every races are different. You know, Badwater's different. You know, there's just different events. But that one in its particular nature, as a whole, I think is one of the most difficult events in the world right now.
I don't know. I think comparable might be being flung out of a space shuttle mid-flight to the moon. That would probably equate to the level of difficulty.
You know, I went into it feeling pretty comfortably prepared, and I got really sick, and I was literally coughing up blood and continuing on. And I found myself a day behind my goal schedule. A day.
Wow.
You know, where people say, oh, I was about, you know, 20 minutes off of my pace.
Yeah.
No, it was a full day behind mine. So.
Yeah, and I know this podcast isn't supposed to be about that, but you know, in races, when you look around you and you say, how am I doing? And then you judge yourself by your fellow athletes. You're like, well, this is a strong runner. We must be doing okay. I mean, I use that as a measuring stick, if you will. And I looked around me and I saw a bunch of strong athletes, and then I ran out of time. You just don't know. That race is packed full of strong people, and that mountain is stronger than a lot of us. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
As you look at this list, have you had a chance to review your list?
I was looking through it. I was actually looking through it. And something caught my eye. I don't know if you guys talked about this.
We haven't.
It's a very simple do not do. And that's don't be rude to volunteers. And I believe this was from Pal Corner. And I always think about that. It's one of those unsung sort of laws. And we don't see it that often out here on the trails, but I know that I volunteered once at the San Francisco Marathon, and oh my God, I just thought, like, those were the rudest runners I've ever seen in my life. But
I was just gonna say, you know, they're not getting paid to be out here. They're out here. They're shivering. Today at Cool is a rainy, cold day, and they're miserable out there, and they volunteered to be here to make your day. So you know, give them a little credit. Give them a little trail love.
Yeah, I mean, just simply, like, as you leave, thank you. I'm really happy when I'm out on the trails, and either I'm at an aid station working there, and I hear people come through, grab their stuff, and say thank you. I mean, it means so much, and it's so simple.
And as far as volunteering goes, the three of us all three of us are runners, and we're volunteering today. When we're out here, doesn't it make you want to run even more? So if you ever feel like you're in a low spot as a runner, volunteer, because there's a shot of adrenaline right to the main vein that comes in that says, get me signed up for a race. In fact, I told myself not to go on to Ultra Sign Up anytime today. If you're going to sign up, do it tomorrow, but off limits for me today.
Hey, Victor, I have a question for you. When you're running a race and you're coming through an aid station and you remember to say thank you, does that play a little bit with your psyche as a runner? Does that help you? Does that give you a little bit of energy?
It does. I mean, it gives me energy that they're there to begin with. And that's another reason why, you know, one should take pause to say thank you, because I come into an aid station and it's just like a new pump of energy. And sometimes I'm not even getting food from that aid station, but just seeing the people and hearing the cheers, it goes a long way. So once I leave that aid station, yeah, I'm feeling like $1 million again for about, you know, 100 meters. And it's back to the same grind.
Yeah. As I look on here, here's a do from Anton. As we mentioned, two-time Leadville 100 winner, and he's accomplished an awful lot. Do, this is a do, not a do not. Do hike hills early on. This will help you maintaining a conservative start. If you're feeling great, there are plenty of miles ahead in the second half of the race to crank up the intensity. And I think that is one of the things that I've tried to practice. Run that first 20% of the race like you'd want to run the last 20. You know, if you just try to balance the bookends of both ends of your race, start off like you'd like to finish, and I think that you would you've done the same thing. You've really set yourself up for success and didn't start out too fast.
Yeah, I actually have a story about that. The first time that I ran Western States in 2009, I had never, that was my first 100 miler, and I had never walked a stitch of training. And that first climb up out of the escarpment, I saw everybody was power hiking. And I thought, wow, well, perhaps I should do that too.
That was wisdom that you decided to follow the crowd.
And a fellow runner said, smart move. You know, some of these guys are just going to barrel up this thing and they're going to crash and kill themselves. And from that point on, I thought, all right, well, maybe I should just do this even though it didn't feel natural. But from that point on, I learned that, yeah, hike early.
Hey, did you ever have any experiences maybe in the earlier shorter distances where you blew up, where you should have run slower and you didn't?
I have to say I'm pretty fortunate that that had never happened to me before.
Good for you.
Yeah. I learned to pace myself running the quad Dipsy.
Okay.
In Mill Valley, California. And for those who don't know where the quad is, it's the Dipsy Trail 4 times. And that was my first ultra, and I had no idea how to do that. And so, yeah, I looked up, you know, some crazy pacing charts, and it looked like the concept of start slow early and pace. Simple. So many people don't do it. So many people just, like, take off, and they know better, and they just go like a bat out of, you know, hell. But, yeah, pacing early. It's a good do.
I'm not that smart. It took me a few races before I figured out this whole strategy of starting slow to finish strong.
What pops into you off the list for you, Scott?
Here's another one from Hal Kerner, and that is do. This is a do. Have fun. Make the most of your day and be grateful for the new unique opportunity to be there. When things go awry, remember to yourself that you are there to have fun and enjoy the day. You've been given as it unfolds. So be present, have fun, enjoy yourself.
I think that's probably one of the most important do's on all these. These are great do's, by the
way.
Do's and don'ts.
So, Victor, when you get into a low spot, how do you come out of that low spot with this? Do you keep reminding yourself that you should be having fun, that this isn't hard work, that you're
these days
to be miserable?
Yeah, these days it's really important. It's probably one of the only things that gets me out of the funk is just to remind myself that I'm supposed to be having fun out here. There's definitely times early on when I first started running where it was just a matter of, well, I'm just going to grind through this and hope that things turn around. Usually it was things were going south because of nutrition, and that was easy to turn around, and then, you know, you're having fun again. But then there's those races where it's just, you don't know why, but you're just grinding, and it sucks. And so you have to kind of remind yourself, hey, I elected to do this. This was my choice. And then sometimes, you know, it's just that easy.
You know, I think it's important to prepare yourself before the race, to know that it's going to suck, and have fun with that sucky time, that dark time in your race. Say, you know, I know there's going to be a point where the plan is going to go out the window and I'm going to have a bad day, but have fun with that. Preparing mm-hmm. your mind, say, okay, I know that that's going to come. I'm going to have fun through that.
I saw an ad for a race, and I don't recall which one it is, but it showed a person that's a runner in agony. I mean, it showed that facial expression, and the caption underneath it was, "This could be you." And we do look for struggle. We do look to overcome those things and see people pulling themselves together and conquering that. I think that if it was all easy, there wouldn't be 809 people signed up for this race today. Mm-hmm. We look for a little bit of that adversity.
Yeah.
So,
you know, one of the other ones from Hal that relates to that is do push yourself.
That was my next one, Scott.
Oh, no.
No, please, take it.
And I think it relates to what you just said. I mean, it's all not unicorns and rainbows out there, too. I mean, you signed up for this, you've done the training for this, and you know that it's work. So don't be afraid to push yourself a little, as long as it's within that window of comfort. But don't be afraid to break out of that. I mean, that's what a lot of us, that's frankly why we all got started on this, is to try to push our limits a little bit, right?
Right.
Yeah, and the why I wanted to bring it up, and that's a good one, but my angle on that was, we always talk about be conservative. I mean, that's the last one I brought up. 20% easy, 20% at the end, both sides of the race. But he reminds us that sometimes you have to go ahead and push because you've trained hard, you've done the work, and you'll never find your potential unless you find that fine line. So, you know, creep up to it. Don't go over it, but make sure that you're not holding back too much. And that's the fun about the race, is you get to learn yourself and you get to read yourself and find that spot. Sometimes you make a mistake and you overestimate, sometimes you underestimate, but your PRs come on the day you hit everything just right.
Hey, Victor, how do you in your race day, how do you know where that line is? That you know I'm pushing myself beyond what I should be doing right now? How does that register?
You know, it's just the effort, the feeling. Sometimes it hits you, and sometimes you're prepared, and for whatever reason, it just, the legs just aren't there. And I've talked to so many, like, really great runners, both elite and middle of the pack and back of the packers, and I think everyone's kind of the same. Sometimes something just drops from the bottom, and it's, you know, and it, maybe you just kind of not, you know, you're pushing a little too hard and you just don't realize it, and you just didn't, you know, you didn't catch that level of, I need to push myself to this point, but then suddenly, whoa, the balloon just popped. What happened? And usually, yeah, I will catch that. You never know when it's going to hit. It could be 5 miles into, you know, a 50 miler, and then you're just like, oh shoot, well, what am I going to do now?
You know, I think that it, kind of related to that is the times when you need to push, you can find good, you know, there's the ebb and flow of the race, where there's times where you're not feeling well and there's times that you are feeling well, and those times that you are feeling well, that's the time when to kind of explore where that line is,
right,
and push that limit.
Yeah.
You don't want to be doing that when your stomach's not working for you, or you're having problems with cramping or blisters or something like that.
Did you guys, Pam Smith's, who's a 2013 Western,
yep,
States 100 champion,
right,
don't compare yourself to others? Did you guys?
No, let's dig into that one.
Don't compare yourself to others. Most likely you know somebody who trains more than you do, who runs faster than you, or who has more experience than you. If you start comparing, you can psych yourself out. Remember, this is about you, your goals, and your personal accomplishments. I don't know how many athletes I've spoken to about this particular issue of feeling like, and you were saying this about being a Tour de France and comparing yourself to the people you were with. I mean, it's easy to fall into that trap, because obviously you are with, you know, a certain group of people, and sometimes you're with those group of people at different events, and so you start to compare, oh, their effort, I'm going to compare my effort to their effort, because we're always around each other at events. But, you know, it's a bad trap to fall into, because it's really your own place in that moment and that time. And kind of like what I was saying about, you know, what is the line where you push yourself too hard? Another person could be having the most phenomenal day of their life, and you're thinking, hey, why are they up ahead? You know, I'm usually running with them. And, you know, it's you just run into the trap of like, oh, now I'm bonking. I shouldn't have followed that person.
You push that line too far ahead,
right,
because you're comparing yourself.
Exactly.
I'm not going to share with you, because I've shared with them before on the podcast, but I can tell you dozens of stories of where I have compared myself to other runners, not ones I'm really familiar with, but people that I, just from my perception, I'm judging them, thinking, oh yeah, I should be able to beat them. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, every single time I was wrong.
They're clapping
every
for you at
time.
The end. they're already back.
They're showered. They're eating their sandwiches. Yeah, it's that's a great one that Pam Smith has come up with.
We've all heard the saying, and it applies to exactly this: run your own race.
Yep.
You know, and everybody could have finished that before I did. Run your own race. Do your thing. Don't go out and try to follow somebody or try to stay ahead of somebody. Stay within your own self. Draw that bubble around you and run your best race. You may pop out of that bubble and pass that person you were thinking about. You ebb and flow. There are peaks and valleys as you go through a run. Times that you're stronger than others. Times you need to pull back and recover, because you reached a little too deep to climb that last hill, or you got a little bit too warm, you're running a bit low on fuel. It's run your own race. And that's the, I think, not comparing yourself to others and staying within yourself is just wisdom, and you learn it from practicing.
And you know, more than enough times you're going to see people just take off and you're going to think, hey, I know that guy or that gal and we run about the same. What gives? But if you stay in that bubble, like you're saying, and you just like, well, you know what? We got, you know, plenty of trail ahead of us. I'm just going to stay where I'm at. Suddenly, somewhere down the trail, you start to reel them in, and there they are. And maybe they just went a little too fast. And so it always happens.
You know, I find it really difficult, especially at the beginning of the race, to remind myself, run my own race. Because you have that adrenaline at the beginning, early in the morning. The pack is there, and they're all kind of taking off. Most of them are taking off too fast. And to try to stay with them, that's where I find it really difficult. If I can get past the first 10 miles without getting caught up in the pack, then I find it much easier to run my own race.
We've watched a bunch of, we're at the finish line, and there's an 8 mile mark where they come out and do a loop and they run past the finish and then back out to do the other 21 or so. And there's just mud all over out here, puddles. But what do we see as people are coming through? The biggest smiles. They're all having fun. And we can talk to them as they're going by and ask them if they're having fun. And they say, a great time. And you just, it reminds us why we do this. And it reminds me not to get to Ultra Sign Up until tomorrow.
You know, one of the ones that we've talked about, and this is just this is also by Hal Kerner, but I've heard it from almost every runner, and that is, don't try something new on race day. What I want to ask each of you is, when was a time that you didn't follow that rule, that you decided to try something new on race day, and how did it go?
I tried a new pair of shoes that I'd never worn, a new completely different style of shoe that I've never worn for a 50 miler, and thankfully it worked out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I had I was thinking that same thought, like, okay, this is something new, this could completely go horribly wrong. But I went for it. I knew it was, you know, it wasn't like, oh, geez, now I learned that lesson. I knew the lesson, and it worked.
Rio de Lago, I'm about mile 35, and things are not going well. It's a 100-mile race, and I'm thinking at that point, what excuses can I come up with to drop from this race? I mean, what can I do? What sounds good? What will sound good tomorrow to me and maybe the person I'm telling? And I really couldn't think of anything, so I couldn't drop from it. But as I was coming back through, John Nichols, who's out here running today, told me to drink something new, something different that I've never had before. It was some soy milk. And I hadn't had that on the race. And that could do anything to you gastrointestinally. I mean, soy milk. But I thought, there's my exit, right? Something new on race day. I'd chug this stuff down, and I'll blow up. My stomach's come apart, and that will be my excuse. And the best thing that happened to me. I felt strong. He put me back together, and I had the best race I've ever had.
Hey, guys, both of you have given me reasons that you should try something new on race day. That's not the point here.
But I was going with your theory. I was hoping it would take me out, but actually it helped me. So, you know, thanks, Sean.
Along with that, on that same line, I mean, there are times where you're close to breaking.
Yeah.
And you're at an aid station, or maybe you're with a pacer, and they recommend, or someone at the aid station recommends trying something that you've never done. Do you take that? Not with the idea like you had of jeopardizing your race, but you're the point of breaking anyway. Do you go ahead and say, you know what, I have nothing to lose here. Let's take the risk and see if this does pull me out of it.
Well, that's, I would say at some point you try anything, right?
Yeah, I agree. I that's happened to me in races before too, where something was just not working, and somebody at an aid station gave me a recommendation, why don't you try this? Of course, I'd never done it before, but you feel like, well, let me give it a shot and see if it makes any difference. Can't get any worse, so...
You know, one of the things that I remember back, there was a big fail, one of the races I did, I had been training with a electrolyte drink, and I didn't plan well, and so the electrolyte drinks that were on the course were very different than what I was used to, and that's all I had, and it did not agree with me. And so that's another point that you probably should do a little bit of preparation and know what kind of aid station foods are going to be out there. And right. if it's not something, or if it's something that you don't train with, maybe you should try training with right. it or bring your own stuff with you.
So I used to work at a running store, and oh. one of the things that we talked with a lot of people who came in about was yeah, trying, experimenting, and not waiting to, you know, let's, well, I'm gonna try these new shoes out at a race, or I'm gonna try this new drink at a race, or new nutrition at a race, but to just go out on your long runs and, you know, just try something different, see what works, because, you know, you'll find a magic potion, and then it's always gonna be the case where 5-6 months, a year down the road, that doesn't work anymore, and you have to start experimenting with something else. So experiment on your long runs, not at the race.
You know, that I think that's an interesting point you brought up, that something that may work for you today may not work for you 5 years from now. Your body changes or whatever. That's an interest. I haven't thought of that.
Would you guys rather go out to a race you've never seen the course at all, or a very familiar course, your home course? This is part of my training course. Run that race, or one that you traveled for, have to get your GPS map out to find the start line, and you just follow ribbons. Of course, you've looked at the profile, you've kind of get an idea of how much climbing and where the climbs are, but what kind of race interests you the most? Would you rather run?
I'm split.
Yeah.
I'll do both.
I think that I prefer one that I am used to or know well, but I think I do better at the unknown race because I'm more conservative.
Yeah, you pull back.
Yeah. I you know, if I was racing way too cool, I know where the downhills are, I know where the hill climbs are. And if you go out to another one, there used to be a race called Ruckachuck that was part of the Western States Trail, and I had never run that at all. And I think I did pretty well on that race because I just was conservative.
I've heard two stories about that race. I think it was coming.
Actually, I want to state for fact, the first half of the race was very good for me.
Because you hadn't seen it, but it was an out and back, so that's how you blew up.
The second half was uphill.
That's a good one. Are you going to pause? Well, we stole Victor from his booth over there, his Victory Sport Design.
I can see them stealing my bags.
And they're worth stealing.
And Scott,
I am not a kleptomaniac, and if I knew Victor was here, I would have excused myself.
There's Eric Schranz from Ultra Runner Podcast and his daughter Sunny passing us by. And, in fact, Scott and I are on the ploy here. We actually have somebody lifting your bags right now.
There you go. That's who it is.
I just got the text. They're gone, so you can go back.
Great.
Hey, thanks
great.
For joining us, man.
Thanks, Don. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, catch up with you guys later.
Always all good right. to have you on. Hey, we just stumbled across another runner, Scott, with wisdom that they'd like to pass along. And this is Kinsey McPhail. And, you know, every Saturday for I don't know how many Saturdays, just she and I seem to pass each other on the trail, and it's almost comical, and I'm just, it almost makes me want to be out there Saturday so I don't fail on her. Kinsey, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you, Don.
Hey, and Scott.
And I did, Scott.
Hey, so, Kinsey, you're volunteering here at the Way Too Cool race also. You're over in the soup kitchen.
I am. I'm chopping up vegetables and getting soup ready for all the runners when they finish.
If you've never been to Way Too Cool 50K, you should sign up just to have the soup.
Tim Ruffino.
Amazing.
So good.
Makes some amazing soup. Chili, too. He calls it Grand Canyon chili or the vegetable soup. So good.
I think we're making some of that, too.
are you taking notes over there? Because it would be great to be able to make this in your own kitchen.
Oh, yeah. I think I've actually learned how to chop vegetables a little bit better from him. He's awesome.
Hey, we looked through the list. What jumps out at you, Kinsey?
I love the not going out too hard section of it.
What made that jump out to you?
I just think that's something that's difficult for a lot of runners to grasp, whether you're front of the pack or back of the pack.
Everyone's allowed to make this mistake?
Everyone's allowed to make this mistake at least once. For example, like for me, for my first 50K, The first half, I was definitely way ahead of my time that I was wanting to be. So I was, and then in my head, I'm like, oh, I'm doing great. Like, I'm going to beat my time, whatever. And then my last half, I just completely crashed and bonked. And I'm like walking up every single hill. And I'm like, I literally, like, I can't even run down this hill. I have no energy.
And when people that you passed early on all of a sudden start passing you, you think, maybe wait, I didn't quite execute well.
Did you have anybody, any mentors that kind of gave you or a little hint that maybe you should have started out a little slower?
I kind of knew. Like, I feel like that's always been in the back of my head. Like, okay, don't start out too fast, but you feel so good and the adrenaline's just going and you're just so excited. And I'm like, my first 50K, so excited. But then once you get running, you're cruising and then you're like, wait. So I definitely, my other races, I like to hang out towards the back of the pack now a little bit. I just like cruise first few miles and then it's like you slowly start to pick people up throughout the whole race. And
that's empowering too,
because
you feel like you've
empowering.
Executed well.
You're like, okay, I'm doing good.
Yeah. That means manage your energy.
Yes.
We've talked that, did you pause it?
Here's one of the problems with that, you guys, is that half of the other people are running too fast when they start out, too. So when you look around at your friends and folks that you're used to running with, they're going out a little bit fast, too. So it's hard, really, to compare yourself to others,
it
which
really
we
is.
Talked a bit a few ago with Victor. You got to stay within yourself and run your own race.
You have to learn, like how you run as an individual, too.
You know, that's a very good point, because some people actually do well by pushing themselves a little earlier in the race, and some do better after 10 miles of a warm-up.
I like to feel better the second half than I did the first half.
How often does
that happen? Very often. Not very often. But if you know you're like a little over halfway done and you're not feeling as bad as you thought you were going to, that definitely feels good and helps.
What's your favorite thing to eat on the trail?
Sweet potatoes.
With salt?
Mashed up?
With salt. Mm. Mashed up, yes.
Made
or just the sweet potato, like, in a baggie, like, that, in my pack.
I think Sunny Blende turned us on to that. She makes her own mashed sweet potatoes.
Well, it's really
with
good
salt.
Carbohydrates and salt and the sugar in it. It's low glycemic, too, so...
You know, thank you so much for reminding me that. I need to try that, because I've gotten to really like mashed sweet potatoes. And I've never, ever had that on a race day.
Yeah.
That's a great...
I like it a lot.
Thank you for reminding me.
Thanks, Kinsey. We have the lead runners coming in now, so we have to get back to our
awesome.
Day job, which is announcing.
Excited.
Okay.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Coming by.
Thank you.
Bye. Well, this podcast has been interrupted by a finish line, Scott.
And it has been exciting, man. There is a lot of mud out there. These runners are filthy.
Anthony Costales, he ran this today in 3:16 and some change. Gus Gibbs, second place. They're both college teammates at the American River College. And followed by Jeff McGavro, came in third place. It is a muddy day, but a fun day out here, and most of the people are smiling, and big smiles on the finishers.
You know, one good thing is it's actually stopped raining, which has made it a nicer day for at least the volunteers out there.
Well, we know that there are a lot of things to do on race day and not to do on race day, but the most important thing is to have fun and make a friend. So with that said, Scott, race
moss.